What's up? Welcome to episode 57 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
Sup, peoples?
And we've brought back our queen of anime for some non-anime-related talk. Mrs. Megan Peters is on here. I don't know why I said Mrs. You're not married or a school marm or anything like that. Miss Megan Peters
is
back on the podcast today. Yeah. So, like I said, sorry, anime fans, we didn't bring back Megan to do her usual dog and pony show. We're going to be talking about, because she has much more knowledge than that, so we're going to kind of break her out and talk about some other things, like in our news flash today, we will be talking about the G.I. Joe franchise, which just got a new lease on life. We'll be talking about Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn and where she may be popping up in the DC movie universe. We will be going over a little bit more of some Powers of X talk after we broke that comic down in our last episode. We have some new things to talk about. And we'll be talking about some RoboCop and some Star Wars, and all of that takes place in our news flash. So be sure to stay tuned after the break as we get into all of that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, so starting at the top today, we're going to talk about DC since we get accused sometimes of not doing enough DC stuff.
You saw that tweet?
I saw that slide into my timeline, and I was like, Matt's going hard for the DC universe.
Yeah, we get accused.
I replied. I didn't go.
You did?
I was.
Yeah, no, you're like one of the biggest champions of DC Comics.
The number of times,
like, you get me interested to reading things, I would have never known half of stuff was going on. Like, I'm reading Deceased right now.
Yeah, it's like the number of times you talk about Deceased in the office. Like, I'm gonna read it now.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah, I mean, but here, let's give some airtime to DC. So, Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. As I was kind of getting ready to come in here, I was working on an article in which. It was a James Gunn post on social media. Apparently, they got a nice little arcade built for themselves on the Suicide Squad set.
Pretty cool.
And he, in one picture, he's playing a huge game of Scrabble that's hung up on the wall, and he's putting in character names, and he's like doing. There's one across the middle that says Harley, and then he's coming down, and he's trying to make King Shark like intersect with that, and people are running with that, saying, oh my God, this is like our first confirmation that Harley Quinn is coming back for Suicide Squad 2, or the Suicide Squad, rather, the reboot, which was kind of in flux whether she would be making it back for the sequel. I mean, you know, at first, originally, she was, then she wasn't. Then earlier this year, we got a rumor saying that despite, you know, what you're hearing, she is going to appear in the film. And now people are taking this as confirmation that, you know, Harley Quinn's coming back. Margot Robbie's currently at work as Harley Quinn in filming Birds of Prey, which is, you know, getting down and going to post-production because it's getting released early next year. But do you guys think she's coming back? I mean, like, to me, it's almost a guarantee. Like,
yeah, she's coming back.
I assumed that was happening.
The only thing that would prevent it would be, like, scheduling, right? Like,
yeah.
If she does have, I mean, a DC schedule. Right now, she has Birds of Prey. If that does well, then we've already heard presumed timeline of her doing a Gotham City Sirens movie, and then there being a Birds vs. Sirens crossover movie. So, yeah, it seemed like, yeah, and she also had, like, 50 projects in the DC universe.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was that, another Suicide Squad movie, another Joker and Harley Quinn movie that was at one point going to be.
Because she was the linchpin. She was the thing that everyone resoundingly said, we like that character.
She was the DC Wonder Woman.
And I actually made a joke in the article that she is to DC now, like, what Robert Downey Jr. was to Marvel, like, in the 2000s. Like,
good job,
like,
Margot Robbie.
Yeah, exactly. Get that money, girl. Like, I mean, basically, yeah, she hops on here, and then she just is, like, everywhere, and she's somebody you can bank and build a franchise around. So, I mean, I'm not too surprised. So far, we've already gotten, we know Viola Davis is coming back as Amanda Waller in the Suicide Squad. We also have gotten multiple teases that Joel Kinnaman will be back as Rick Flag in the film. So bringing those people back and not bringing back Harley Quinn, even if it's just for like a smaller appearance or a role in the film, depending on like what Margot Robbie's available to do, it seems like it'd be crazy. And it seems like especially crazy not to give James Gunn that character
to
play.
Gunn with Harley Quinn using Margot Robbie. Yeah. I mean, I can only assume, I mean, everything that we read, that Birds of Prey, it's looking good. I'm sure that Warner Brothers feels confident with it, at least enough if they're like, okay, yeah, take her back for Suicide Squad. Clearly they're happy with her.
Yeah, and added to this story was the fact that James Gunn kind of hinted that, like, he's not interested in doing, like, bigger DC Universe kind of cross-in ties, and he kind of threw shade at this suggestion that, you know, or the question that will Batman show up in the Suicide Squad? Because Batman, of course, Ben Affleck's Batman makes an appearance in the original Suicide Squad. Back when we thought this was all cool in the DCEU after Batman, Superman was all connected, and, you know, we're like, oh, it's all connected. It's so great. And he has those little cameos, those crappy cameo appearances in Suicide Squad. But
is that one of the worst post-credit sequences ever?
Ooh, Suicide Squad?
With him showing up with, it's just sitting at a table and he's talking to Waller.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually liked that one.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, actually, the Bruce Wayne one that leads into Justice League, I did like.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is just like the flash. Suicide Squad is mostly, the first half of the movie is just repeated flashback sequences.
Him chasing the car and all that.
Him chasing the car and Joker and Harley, and then Amanda Waller just throwing these scenes and her like little backstory. I mean, they were so bad.
I am also really excited for
King
Shark.
At least the flash part was okay.
Yeah, the flash part was good.
The flash part was great. Like, I was
that's
like,
how you do it well.
Thank you for doing it that way.
Yeah. They tried to put drama into the Batman scenes with him and Deadshot and Deadshot's daughter and him.
See, I didn't mind the Deadshot one either.
I didn't mind it, but it wasn't great. Like, Ben Affleck's Batman being this like hardcore bruiser, and he's having like a heart-to-heart in this alley with Deadshot and whatnot. And like, I don't know. It was weird, but we don't need him for this because, I mean, obviously the first thing is Suicide Squad's already in a weird enough place with how this movie relates to the first one. Is it a reboot? Is it a sequel? Mm-hmm. It's kind of been like,
people keep calling it a relaunch.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot.
And that's what it is. They keep hedging their bets. They keep saying things like, oh, the things that have happened in this universe have happened, but this is a new story.
I wish Gunn would just come out and say like, hey, we're keeping all the stuff you loved.
Yeah.
Let go of everything else. Because if it didn't work the first time, we're not keeping it.
It's so, not going to work. You're
not going to talk about it. Like,
yeah.
So does that mean we are or are not going to get Slipknot back?
Slipknot's dead. He's
no. Okay. Yeah,
are you a Slipknot stan?
I mean, if I was going to stan any part of the movie, it would be him.
Well, he tried to run and now he's dead AF. R.I.P.
King Shark, man. Yeah, I'm so stoked for King Shark.
Yeah, I want to see Harley Quinn and King. Like, I mean, there's just so many characters in this. Like, I want to see Harley Quinn just like with a league of people like King Shark, Rat Catcher. I mean, who was Polka Dot Man in this? I forget.
It was Polka Dot Man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just seeing those B-list villains and then her and then whoever, like, and if Idris Elba, whoever he's playing, like Bronze Tiger, whoever, being like, again, like the serious one, and Harley Quinn just being in that, like, that'd be great. God, so need that element. So let's hope this one's true. All right, moving right along. So we're going to talk about G.I. Joe. A franchise we all pretty much thought was dead by this point, like deader than doornails after that unfortunate run in the late 2000s with the...
You didn't like Retaliation?
No.
Why was my face so high?
No, Soldier Boy, I did not.
It was so high. I don't know why I went that high.
Like,
okay, anyway.
I actually like Rise of Cobra better than Retaliation.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Retaliation is such a dumb movie. Like, and it's so bad.
Compared to Cobra?
At least Rise of Cobra tries to have stupid fun with its premise. Like, with the accelerator suits and Marlon Wayans and like Channing Tatum.
We're witnessing the moment.
Retaliation is just like a bad B movie that's sad and not even exciting at all. There's nothing G.I. Joe about it. I mean, the Ninja Cliff thing is like the only.
That's a very G.I. Joe sequence.
Like a very, but there's like one.
And
sequence.
The Rock embodies a G.I. Joe character.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's
okay.
Really
no,
super
Rock cool. does embody, but also we're witnessing the moment Matt's having a full mental breakdown.
Oh no, I just never heard any. That's one of the almost like sure bets in geekdom is that like that movie gets trashed on. So I'm just amazed. No, that's awesome. No, I love what you love.
I like Rise of Cobra for the stupid fun that it is.
Baroness was terrible though.
Nah, I think Baroness was not.
My oh.
Not even.
Wait for the special
again. Accelerator suits. All right, but listen, we can all agree that the best part of all those movies is what they're distilling down into this new project, which is a Snake Eyes spinoff with Henry Golding, who's in Crazy Rich Asians, and he's in this new movie with Emilia Clarke.
Oh yeah, the Christmas one. Yeah.
I know. So, what a great announcement timing. The trailer for Last Christmas comes out.
It looks so good.
Also, you see this rom com? Guess who's gonna be in G.I. Joe? Like that's. Like,
I'm so excited for that movie.
When's Emilia Clarke joining the franchise? She's not busy. She's
so basically, so we're getting a spinoff, and okay, so it's exciting because you hear Snake Eyes, you hear this guy who's a, you know, Henry Golding, who's a really fast rising actor, and it sounds good. Of course, there are some caveats to this, and a couple of them are the director, Robert Schwentke. I don't know how to say his name. Schwentke, the guy who directed the last two Divergent movies. So that's already a major red flag on this. And the other one is that this story will be about Snake Eyes as a kid using his, not the whole time, but like losing his father, like and having to get revenge by joining a ninja clan. So it's essentially, basically like. It's every Kung Fu story ever with a G.I. Joe kind of brand slapped on it. So it's not even going to really... So it'll lead up to how he becomes Snake Eyes in G.I. Joe. So it's really not about G.I. Joe.
So it's a prequel.
Much.
Yeah. And
Now, here's the thing. The only thing that kind of really gives me excitement... Oh, man. I'm about to blow it again. This is about to be Zelda 2 all over again.
Zelda 2? What happened with it?
When I couldn't remember the proper name for Zelda 2 when we were doing a show.
I'm still tripping off of the fact that it's okay. Cobra is a better movie than
I'm bringing
sequel.
Up Zelda.
I'm still tripping on that.
You trip on that.
I can't process that.
Okay, so I think it was... No. It was G.I. Joe, I believe. Renegades, was it?
Oh, the adult cartoon that was kind of like... Yeah.
I don't know if this was
not
it.
Adult, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
More mature.
Older kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was more, it was older. And
I love that.
Oh, man. Is it G.I. Joe? I know I'm going to get this wrong.
That cartoon was awesome.
The internet's going to tear me apart, but I think it might have been G.I. Joe Renegades.
That sounds right.
G.I. Joe Resolute. I believe it was actually G.I. Joe Resolute. Okay. Yeah, I think it was Resolute. Anyway, they had like this web series of shorts. And one of them, the best one, was a Snake Eyes duel when he was a kid with Storm Shadow. It was like a whole kind of ninja episode about them having this duel, which was freaking awesome and like really good. I'm just hoping this movie will kind of, I'm hoping this will be like to G.I. Joe what Shang-Chi is to Marvel, which is a traditional kung fu movie, just like on steroids, boosted up with the fantasticalness of like comic book type superhero stuff.
I would be all about this if it didn't take place in the past. If you said everything you said to me as far as like the battle between them, the he has to like go back to his roots and ninja clans, all that sounds awesome. If it wasn't, this is how he becomes Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes is cool in and of himself. I don't need an origin story. I just want, he's a badass. I just want him to be a badass.
Yeah, Snake Eye has a whole origin story in G.I. Joe Resolute, which is awesome. And so if they can take... I hope this project is somebody just stumbled upon that web series that some like, you know, douchebag in Hollywood was like, oh man, I saw this web series, it gave me a great idea. Well, it was blowing lines. Like we should do a whole story. So Snake Eyes movie, like origin movie. Yeah. And I hope it's dope. Like this episode of G.I. Joe Resolute was because that's the only way. And like I said, just pumping a normal kind of Kung Fu ninja story up and to be a little more fantastical and superhero-y.
Yeah.
And just, you know, that's the only way you get around this. Otherwise you've just bastardized the G.I. Joe. You just stolen the brand name to slap it on a generic ninja movie.
So that's the question.
Yeah,
that's
kind of my question.
Does this tie back to the other ones at all?
They have not gone down that.
I would appreciate it if they didn't. I feel like this is a really good opportunity, especially since it's branded Snake Eyes rather than like G.I. Joe : Snake Eyes.
Yeah.
That this is a good way to kind of diverge that franchise because unless you're a diehard like fan, like I feel like it kind of has a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
Because you just kind of heard all of these bad things about the last movies that came out of the franchise before it died quietly.
Yeah, I definitely think Fresh is better.
I feel like Snake Eyes, you'll see a trailer for that in the theater and be like, oh, this looks like a really cool action film. And you might not necessarily understand or really care that it is attached to G.I. Joe.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping because, I said, Resolute, that G.I. Joe Resolute, for all me not being able to remember the name, did stick with me about how awesome it was, so... I'm hoping it's that, and, like, yeah, it's not just... I hope we don't get shoehorned with some weird G.I. Joe prequel madness that doesn't make any sense, so... Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, this franchise has a great history, so we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, so moving right along. We have some disappointing news, which kind of bummed me out.
Yeah.
Neil Blomkamp, director of District 9, Elysium, has dropped out of directing the RoboCop reboot, which sucks. Because we were really excited when we heard there was going to be... I mean, RoboCop reboot is not words that make people excited anymore. Thank you, Joel Kinnaman. Basically, this reboot. But, like, hearing Blomkamp was going to do not even just a... Like, he was going to do one of those direct sequels. They were looking at possibly bringing back Peter Weller as RoboCop and doing this whole thing. And people were, like, flipping out because Blomkamp basically is a guy who kind of, like, pioneered certain visual effects. He made awesome sci-fi stuff, like photoreal. Mm-hmm. It sounded like we could get a really cool, like, RoboCop story, even, like, out of the Dark Horse era, something more... heavily sci-fi, who knows where he could have taken it, and it would have been great, except now he's not in it. He has another movie he's going to shoot for MGM, and I'm kind of excited to hear it. It's a horror thriller. He's taken on a horror thriller movie, Blomkamp, so it would be interesting to see what that is. But it's now just moving on, so he couldn't do it. So they're not killing the film. The film's still moving on. He's just not going to do it. And he even said something along the lines of, I'll be excited to watch in theaters with other fans. And it's like, well, you're like the only one at the point at this point who will be excited to watch that film in theaters with other fans. Because now, I mean, like,
Was there already a script and stuff or no?
Yeah, like, was he just directing or did he do, like, writing or, like, anything like that?
Because then it's like, if they're still going with his broader outline or his vision, then it's a little more interesting.
He had a script for it because... He even had a title called RoboCop Returns.
Oh, then I feel like had a solid bit of work to do with this film.
Yeah,
and the original script writer, and the original RoboCop writer, Edna Numeir, had stuff he was doing. They were working on a script, it says.
Okay.
Earlier this summer, it said early back in June, they were still working on the script. But they had the idea. They had the story. I mean, he had everybody kind of involved that he needed. Like, this was in the process.
So we could still then see...
At least a partial.
Yeah, like vision. Some kind of broad interpretation of what he meant to do.
Unless a new director comes in, looks at that script and says, nah, and does rewrite.
Justice League treatment, which that does. Should work out well. It could all work out, and we could get a great, like, you know, new director, but I think at the same time, we'll all still be wondering, like, what would have Niels Blomkamp's, and he's quickly just becoming the director of that, like, we all wonder what Neil Blomkamp's Halo movie would have been like.
Yeah.
We all wonder what Neil Blomkamp's Alien 5 would have been like if he had gotten to do that like he was on the way of doing. And now we're going to wonder what Neil Blomkamp's RoboCop. At this rate, we're going to need a Powers of X freaking timeline so we can have one where we get actual Neil Blomkamp movies that we wanted to see instead of Chappie.
If he needs a job, Akira needs a director, so...
That is true. Akira does need a director, so... I mean, other guy I would trust probably doing that besides Taika Waititi. So, you know, there you go. We just came up with an idea. Neil Blomkamp, save Akira.
Please.
All right, but we'll wait and see what happens with RoboCop Returns, and maybe we'll all feel better about it if it's announced like James Cameron's doing it. I don't know. All right, moving right along. Ewan McGregor, it's looking like we're getting closer and closer to this Obi-Wan Kenobi confirmation, and now it's kind of being speculated that D23 Expo, which is coming up next week, I believe, will, one of the many announcements we're hoping to see from both Marvel and Star Wars side, that we'll get a confirmation on this Obi-Wan Kenobi project, possibly for Disney Plus as a kind of series. This is a project that's been bouncing around. I mean, they all stole it from my original, you know, seven things that they should do with the Star Wars franchise when we basically, when they sold Disney to, Lucasfilm to Disney, I wrote up, that was like one of the first slideshows I ever, and they stole quite a fair amount of those ideas. Not all of them worked, because in that thing I did suggest a Miller and Lord Han Solo movie. Yeah. I was like, that would be a great
gravy.
Like a comedy about Han and Chewie first meeting on some kind of heist.
I mean, you could
with
have
Bill
been
Lord
right.
and Chris Miller, and they actually did that.
Yeah.
And it fell apart horribly. So maybe
I mean, if they'd let it go, he could have been right.
I said Obi-Wan Kenobi in that same post, and I've rewritten this many different times in different ways, would be great because he's kind of like the different eras of Obi-Wan's life are kind of like an epics. It's like a knight's story almost, like mm-hmm. a King Arthur story kind of. And all the changes he goes through, and it could have a lot of shifting tones and like really kind of great stuff because the stuff when he's on Tatooine is like a lot more meditative and like Zen type stuff. Whereas mm-hmm. like before that, it's like high flying adventure and all this.
Yes.
There's some love, some intrigue, you know, with Duchess Sabine, if you've watched the animated series. Mm-hmm. So Obi-Wan's a rich, complex character. Ewan McGregor's the man playing with him. And I think I would love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there has even been some story suggestions in the past, but I would like to see something that kind of takes place when he's on Tatooine, something he becomes embroiled in that also recalls stories of his past and things like that. That would mm-hmm. be kind of cool. So I hope we get this announcement because this is one Star Wars project I've really been waiting for mm-hmm. and I'm excited for it. And it looks like Megan's pretty excited over there.
Oh my gosh. I'm like such a huge like Star Wars freak, like growing up on it. Like when I saw Phantom Menace as a kid, like I'm pretty sure my first crush was Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi. I have like dedicated my like Star Wars fandom life to this character. And so like all of the, well, it's not really considered any part of the franchise anymore, but all the extended universe books yeah. that I read about Obi-Wan in middle school and like gushed over. Like I know Lucasfilm and Disney will try probably like shy away from that. I definitely think Kofi's probably closer to the nail of it being like Tatooine, like before obviously Star Wars and him like reflecting on his past with like all of the battles he was in, because mm-hmm. like he had a crazy life. Like you see him like with Qui-Gon and like Phantom Menace and you're like, oh, he's gonna just be a really chill dude. He's like not. He like yeah. goes off and does all this crazy stuff. So
yeah, Clone Wars showed like yeah why
yeah
he, how Clone he grew Wars. Into a great general. But yeah, just something kind of on Tatooine detailing how he mm-hmm. went from general to like true master, which is yeah. an important shift in Obi-Wan's character. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen the episode of Star Wars Rebels, there's an awesome mm-hmm. episode where they kind of close off the storyline between Darth Maul and Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he's on Tatooine,
mm-hmm.
and Darth Maul kind of tracks him down while he's and realizes that he's watching Luke, and that Luke is this all important mm-hmm. thing in the future. So Obi-Wan has to kind of defend him.
Yeah,
and it's pretty freaking awesome.
Yes,
because you see the transformation where he's gone from the guy you knew in Clone Wars and the prequels to like being this master who can like seriously destroy somebody in like two sword strokes.
Yeah,
I mean, well, also so. I wouldn't ever be opposed to them just doing a live action version of Rebels.
Oh,
Rebels has so many great
Rebels
episodes.
Has so many good episodes.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah.
And that one was yes. like probably my top three favorites. Mm-hmm. Of him. Yeah, so.
And now that you've brought this up, I just want Darth Maul. I just want to bring Darth Maul back. Like, the choreography of that fight, I mean, with the backing of Disney and Lucasfilm, with the money that they're going to be willing to put into that, Disney yeah. Plus, if that is what this project goes into, I would be very surprised if this became, like, a movie. I feel like Disney Plus is, yeah. like, the perfect place
and for it. And I think it's a good time because there's a lot of themes of Obi-Wan being so powerful that is echoed in the original Star Wars of him being so powerful, but like having the wisdom to know what to do with that power. It's mm-hmm. not just like go out and conquer the universe, go out and cut down all the dark side in the Empire. Like he mm-hmm. has to play his position, and a series could really go deep into examining how hard that is
yeah.
to kind of sit on the sidelines, knowing this greater good you have to wait for while things are turning really terrible around
mm-hmm.
you, and it's partially your fault. So, like, yeah, like all of that would be really heavy, and Ewan McGregor would pull that off beautifully.
Oh, for sure.
So let's get it, Disney. All right, moving on to our last news flash story of the day. This is just a quick revisit to Powers of 10. We were talking about that and breaking down the spoilers for that.
Tinfoil hats on.
Put them on tight.
And one thing we didn't come to that I wanted to kind of correct in our discussion is we had this whole discussion about, you know, now we've gotten all these layers about these different periods of the X-Men's future. The various lives of Moira Exer, who is Moira McTaggart as an Omega mutant. And then in this Powers of 10 2, there's a bunch of big reveals like, you know, that Xavier and Magneto have been working together with Moira since the beginning of the X-Men timeline, like we know. Also, we got to look in and learn more about this future, which we all said was like, when Powers of 10 came out, was the exciting part for us, was this future 100 years after House of X, when we find a world where a universe where basically the man and machine, and humans and sentinels have united to form the man-machine supremacy, and they go to war with mutants who have been driven off of the planet mostly, except for the last surviving X-Men, and, you know, what that was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so this issue gives us a lot more of that.
Yeah.
And a lot more scenes of these future X-Men kind of interacting. And with that, we learn that Apocalypse is their leader and has been, you know, in this timeline the whole time, that something that Powers of 10 number one didn't reveal to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very crucial because it connected back to House of X number two. And Hickman's not lying. Like, once you get a new issue, you read back mm-hmm. to an old one and it changes everything. So we read back to House of X 2 and you realize, oh, there's a timeline in there where Moira and wakes up Apocalypse early. They kill Xavier Magneto, form their own X-Men, and start what's labeled in the charts of timelines as the Apocalypse War.
Yeah.
That goes into an undetermined amount of the future. Well, some Marvel fan out there, and I'm butchering your Twitter name, I forget it, and I really should learn it, I'm sorry, but kind of did a very careful reading and breakdown of this and noticed that in Powers of 10, one page about the surviving mutants and the human supremacy and the man-machine supremacy
mm-hmm.
is labeled, you know, ML9 Apocalypse Build in one of those tiny little data footnotes that Hickman includes on the chart there, because they're like computer files.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is the call for that file is where it's categorized. And he kind of broke it down with other pieces of evidence to basically, and you can read this all on comicbook.com, to basically say that there's mounting evidence that the timeline with the future war, the man-machine supremacy, and even the one beyond that, 1,000 years into the future with the Ascension, is actually Moira MacTaggert's 9th lifetime. And what the trick is of Powers of X is it presents it like it's the future of House of X afterwards, but this is the 9th time, like the 9th lifetime with the Apocalypse and the Ascension, and whatever happens to her in that thing, she doesn't die. She could very well be the blue person we are seeing in that 1,000-year future, because Apocalypse changes her. He gives her some of power, and one of his quotes in the beginning of one issue is, if you can survive long enough, I will make you something eternal that doesn't die. And that she lives through that. And at the end of House of X 2, the Phalanx came in to cause this ascension, whatever we're still learning is going to be. And that somehow she goes through this entire cosmic evolution over the course of like 1,000 years in this one lifetime. And then House of X is her 10th lifetime. And so now there's crazy theories about whether she dies or just diverges and there's a second Moira. And that gets crazy. I'm not going into that. Like, that House of X is her 10th lifetime. And this changes so much about the story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like the X-Men of the future, who we now think are these chimeras, because Mr. Sinister, the backstory is Mr. Sinister in this future bred all these pod people, and there were 4 generations and some of them. And so like Wolverine that we see, Magneto we see, are actually like Magneto and Polaris hybrids, Wolverine and Sabretooth hybrids and stuff like that. And so we just wanted to put that out there because that's pretty mind-blowing.
I was really, I can't believe that. Like I was stunned when you said when you were like, hey, the Polaris and Magneto thing and the Wolverine and like Sabretooth thing and how they're like, they really look like they're spliced together versions. Like those are all not the X-Men we know. And like, it was one of those things that, like, when you hear it, you go, ah, oh, of course. Like, that makes total, like, it clicked. Like, it clicked in my brain. It really is. If that is the 9th, if that is her 9th life, that really does require, like, you to go back
and read
every single of those. Because, it does change.
And when you do, and the thing that's so great in this fan point out is when you go back, it all does connect and it makes sense. Because Powers of 10, your first issue starts with her meeting Xavier at this carnival back in the past before the X-Men. And he's just kind of sitting there being goofy, looking around all happy. And she walks up to him and she has this monologue that she introduces. And she says, I was wandering through this carnival and I saw and she references things she saw in the carnival. And there's 3 pictures in stained glass windows while she's talking in the panel. And one's of stained glass of Rasputin, one's of Cardinal, and one's of the Nimrod monolith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't understand that when you read Powers of X. You don't know what the hell that means.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when you go back after House of X or Powers of X 2 and read that scene again, it's basically her hinting to Xavier that she's lived through this distant future.
Yeah.
In the Ascension and the Man-Machine Supremacy War. And now she's coming back with all of that knowledge for this 10th lifetime.
Yeah.
So it does. It tracks. And like I said, I mean, this whole theory was cracked because a guy noticed like
one little data file
notation.
So how angry is Hickman about that and, now?
He's not, because he's doing some purpose. Because when you read it in Powers of X 1 again, you read that notation, it didn't make any sense to any of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We didn't have any idea what that meant.
Yeah, you have no context.
No.
Yeah.
It's not until the next issue, House of X 2, that you have to read it and like then go back and read that. And now you can begin to pick out, oh, ML9 means Moira's life 9.
Yeah.
And the apocalypse build is because that's when she became an apocalypse being.
Yeah, it would be frustrating for him, I imagine, if he wasn't planting seeds and someone just guessed it. But these are things he's putting in there specifically for you to find.
Yeah.
And as
and he's forcing you to reread.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
which is what I enjoy the most, because that's good literature, like forcing you to reread. Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah, and there's even other things, other clues, like, Cardinal in this weird moment of dialogue when he's trying to escape this death mission with, Rasputin says, I'm planting this black seed of Krakoa, which is a portal that takes them back to Krakoa. And he's like, you know, either you'll make it or I'll see you again when the world is made again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And which is like, what is the hell does that mean? Is that like some weird religious thing? Which is what it sounds like
mm-hmm. the first time you read it,
but then you go back and read it after House of X 2 and it's like, oh, in this future, they know about Moira's power, and they know that once this is over, there's a reset.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of crazy. So just wanted to throw that out there and see if you guys had any additional thoughts, if you guys are enjoying this.
I'm definitely enjoying it. I feel like I'm reading it more casually, so every time I come
That's not allowed, Megan.
I'm sorry, but I am. So every time I come in,
you've got to get your tinfoil hat.
I come in absolutely confused. Like, me and Brandon will be like, what is happening?
Yeah, I'm so deep in a rabbit hole right now. Like, about this. Like, I feel like it's taking up all my time. But congrats to Jonathan Hickman.
No, all right. It's great.
When we come back, we are going to do, for our deep dives today, we're bringing back Rants and Raves, where each of us get to rant and or rave about things we are either watching, reading, or playing in the industry and share those with you guys. So be sure to stay tuned. All right, so rants and raves. I'll go first. I'm just going to run through some TV, actually, because we haven't, like, it's kind of hard to judge when we put TV on here and who cares and how much do they care. You know, we did an episode about The Boys and it was like our lowest downloads in a while, so.
You know. Even though everyone asked for The Boys.
Exactly, even though everyone asked for The Boys.
Yeah.
Maybe we were just too early. People are still catching on. So go back and check out The Boys episode because we go deep into The Boys. Phrasing, yes, I heard it when I said it.
All right.
But for
let's
show
just move
like,
on.
You
let's
know
just
what?
Move
for
on.
A show like that, no. For a show like that, I'm not changing what I said. The Boys knows what it does, and they know what they like. All right. So, I'm going to talk about some TV. I'm going to talk about Preacher Season 4 and Krypton Season 2. Preacher Season 4 has just begun. Krypton Season 2 has just ended. Preacher Season 4 is going to wrap up this story. This is the final season of Preacher. And so it's going to wrap up Garth Ennis and Ellis. I'm like combining people, Warren Ellis and Garth. Garth Ennis. Steve Dillon's story. I just wanted to bring this up because I feel like Preacher's kind of lost a lot of its muster season by season. It's just this thing I'm kind of watching now. And the fourth season's kind of like that. Even though the fourth season's had some fun and inspired things in the first couple of episodes that have been put out, I feel like somewhere around the middle of season two, it kind of really lost steam in that New Orleans season where they just were sitting around that house of Cassidy's son for like the whole season. That got kind of boring. I thought when they introduced Hare Star last season, it would get a little more exciting, and it did for a while in a couple episodes. But I didn't even remember like when this season started, how the last one ended. I was like super duper confused. Yeah. I was just like,
it's not a good start.
It's
not a good start.
And so this one is just like I said, I'm just kind of in it just to wrap it up at this point. But like, Preacher's not my favorite adaptation. And after seeing something like another Ennis project, like The Boys, like it's even harder for me to enjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, Preacher gets away with a ton of crazy stuff on TV. Some of the most brutal fight sequences I've ever seen. Some pretty perverted, crazy stuff that they do, but it just doesn't compare. Like, Ennis is on the level like where something like Amazon streaming makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
The Boys and the production values on that. Even though it's like the same creative team, essentially, except that supernatural Eric Kripke makes all the difference, and besides just having Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg.
God bless Kripke.
Yeah, God bless Kripke. So I'm in it for the finale of Preacher, and I'm glad it finally did get made, because it's one of those long-awaited projects that we were always waiting for. And for kids who didn't read the comic, I'm sure this is going to be great and send them back to read it. So that's all good. And I love the cast. Dominic Cooper, he's okay. I don't love him. But Ruth Nega and Joseph Gilgan, who that guy, like, yeah, I love that guy, because that guy is really like a real life soccer thug.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just like this European soccer goon, like, dude.
Perfect.
Like, yeah, I met him for that Vin Diesel movie, The Last Witch Hunter, when he was just like that crazy, like, child witch doctor. And like, yeah, that dude is just straight up. What you see on screen is like what he is in real life, and I love that dude. So,
I dropped off with Preacher. Like, geez, after the first season, I think I dropped off with Preacher. How close is it to, as far as like the ending of the book? Like, are they even close to that? Did they make it to like anywhere near the ending of the book, or is it like cutting off way ahead? Like,
I never actually read the ending. I only read like the first volume. Yeah, from what I understand, I mean, of course, they're taking liberties, but they're going to nail all the major points.
Okay.
Like, you're tracking down, getting close to God now, that's like the final stretch.
Okay.
You know, Adolf's taking off over hell, like all that stuff's happening.
And this was the thing, they knew they were it was their final season, so they were able to close it out. Okay,
cool. Yeah.
So that's that. Moving on, I'm going to talk about Krypton Season 2. I think Krypton is one of the most slept-on superhero shows.
Oh, yeah.
I can't really get too crazy about it, because I just caught up and binge watched the end of the season after falling off for a good portion of season two. Because it's just one of those things, like builds up on my DVR, and then I watch a bunch. But when I do watch it, I love it. The cast is what really makes that show. The design and how they found an angle. Because we heard this thing about, we're going to tell the story of Superman's grandpa with no Superman. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that sounded so boring.
It sounded like that Battlestar Galactica, Caprica, like that Battlestar Galactica thing was what we were all terrified it would be again. But no, they found a great way into that mythos. And season one was so tight with the reveals of like General Zod and this, in you know, Light of Zod and the whole Zod L family feud and the Romeo Juliet story. That was all good. And then Brainiac came in and we got this cliffhanger ending. And I thought, whereas most shows would like spend a whole second season dealing with like the whole Segel, Brainiac lost in the universe, being tracked by Lobo stuff, like they advertised at the beginning of the season, that is so wonderfully quick. Like, the first two or three episodes get through all that, and then they're back to Krypton. And yeah, it was much deeper. And this sophomore season was actually good about taking everything good about the first season, deepening the drama and the character arcs, and making everything more complex. They had some great reveals. Like some shocking character deaths, some great reveals. Some great sequences with like Doomsday and all that. And I'm not going to spoil the end of the season for you. You should go watch it. But let's just say I'm excited for a season three. So if you haven't been checking out Krypton, like, and you're looking for, you know, good comic book TV shows right now, definitely check that out. Don't let it go dead class on us, man, because I love
that.
Finally, I'm going to just say a quick thing about, since BD's not here, I'm going to, Brandon Davis isn't here, I'm going to talk about Fear the Walking Dead, which came back for the second half of season five. And my God, this show. I loved this show, but it is sucking right now. And that's my rant. Like, Fear the Walking Dead, Bray Beatty referred to it, I think, as Gimble speak, Scott Gimble.
Yeah.
When he started showing up in The Walking Dead, there was this trend of him talking about with characters being like, we're not good enough. We got to be better people. And this whole thing of morality, like, we want to be better people by helping people in the zombie apocalypse. Well, they've just taken that concept and thrown it into Fear the Walking Dead full tilt. And this first return episode is like a found footage movie of them trying to save a family and to all talking to the camera about how they're going to be better people and help the world. And it's just like, I don't want to watch this for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not at all. Like, all this touchy, saccharine, feel good, we're going to be heroes crap. Like, you have lost this series. And it's a shame, because it has such, Fear the Walking Dead has, like, great characters even quicker than The Walking Dead did. So it's boiled it down to just, like, just great fan favorites. Strand, Daniel, you know, Alicia, you know, John and June, this, you know, the couple that's like really good. Lenny James as Morgan. But they've ruined all these characters at the same time with this like overly existential thing about, we want to be good people, we want to help people, we want to make up for all the bad stuff we've done. We're like, you guys aren't villains. Like, you've been the heroes we've been following this whole time.
Yeah.
Like, you've done some screwed up stuff, but like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So as far as I'm concerned, Fear the Walking Dead is as dead, you know, as it gets. I mean, and it's not looking good for this Walking Dead franchise right now. So bring on that third show.
I was going to say, yeah, I was about to get a third one.
That'll do it for me and my rants and raves. Pass it off to Megan next.
Hello. You thought that I was here to talk about things that were not anime, but at last, I am here to talk about anime. Kofi didn't know. I snuck it in. My rave right now is, real quick, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I have not talked about that series on this podcast, but it is just, like, absolutely insane. There's literally no way I can, like, boil it down other than the fact that there's, like, supernatural forces and vampires and, like, overt Italian fashion and, like, gratuitous, like, dancing poses. Anyways, it's a latest season. Golden Wind just came to an end, and it was excellent. If anyone is looking to kind of, like, catch up on some anime who doesn't like, you know, watching it week by week, they just get really annoyed with that and just want to watch it all in one go, it is now done. You can now watch it. It is available online to stream. Crunchyroll, Hulu, various other locations. And if you're someone who wants to actually watch anime while it's airing, a show, Demon Slayer, has just taken social media by storm. It was, like, trending, like, for 2 days worldwide on Twitter. I don't know what I do.
I like Twinder. I like Twinder.
Twinder.
I like Twinder.
Confused. Make Twinder. Sure you send out Twitter. The right thing on the right platform.
Twinder is a terrifying idea, and I regret saying it. But
wipe down.
Yes, but
you can take your shot in 100 characters or less. Ooh,
I need to copyright this real quick.
Yeah,
but
you gotta do it.
But Demon Slayer, it's an excellent show. That's definitely a rave for me. A second rave for me is also, it's not a new thing, but it's new to me because of all the writers here at comicbook.com, I have not seen, like, a lot of, like, staple films like Back to the Future or anything.
You haven't seen Back to the Future?
I have now.
That. Oh, okay.
I have now.
This is where this is headed.
I have now because this weekend I'm going to visit my best friend whose husband just bought a DeLorean.
Wow.
So I get to, and he was like, you literally can't come up here and get in this DeLorean unless you've seen the movie. Because he's like the biggest back, like there, his groomsman cape was a DeLorean.
I mean, he just bought a DeLorean.
Yeah, like he is he's obsessed. Yeah. So I have now gotten to see Back to the Future if anyone wants to talk about that movie. Disappointed guy,
but a DeLorean, having grown up in the 80s, is just a really crappy car.
Oh, yeah, no, they're terrible.
Oh, but his is like all souped up and stuff. Oh. Yeah, his is all like, it's like the body, but it's just like that. And I'm like, all right, I'm now excited if anyone wants to talk about that. My rant for this week is probably a rave to everyone else, but also the comic book staff people. I've never watched, like, scary movies, but Chapter 2 is coming out, and I am obsessed with Stephen King. I love his novels, and so I loved the novel for It. And I've never seen the first one. I never saw Chapter 1 because I was too scared. I was too chicken. So I will be watching that this weekend, and I'm just ranting because I'm scared.
Oh, I was so scared because I thought you were going to rant about the first one. I'm like, no, I love the movie.
No, I'm wanting encouragement here of why.
It's so good, even if you're not like, because I'm not either. I'm not a giant horror genre fan, but that movie's just great.
Okay.
The movie is good.
All right, I'm really looking for hype here because I'm watching it like in literally probably like 5 hours.
Man, Back to the Future and It.
Yeah, that's only one week. Good lineup. You're not going to be disappointed with that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm catching up. But yeah, I haven't seen any scary movies. So again, if you want to hit me up with some terrifying ones, I'll tell you this. My boyfriend was like, all right, we're going to start you with scary movies. This is where you're going to start. I was so low on the level. We start with Ghostbusters.
Oh, my God.
Wait, had you not seen Ghostbusters before?
No, because I was too scared.
That was too, I mean, I was things were edgier scared. Back then.
Yeah. I legitimately got scared.
It was like
scared.
That was like when PG was still like kind of edgy.
So wait, did you watch Ghostbusters yet?
Yeah, I loved
How
it.
How was it?
Okay. It was pretty great. I absolutely loved it. Up until now, the scariest movie I've seen was like Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow.
And I still had to like,
I mean, a lot of people were scared of Jurassic Park. That's like,
I had to like close my eyes for a lot of it.
Yeah, like a lot of people were scared for Jurassic Park. That has a lot of scary moments in it. So like, yeah, Ghostbusters is a lot lighter fare.
Yeah. So there's that. I'm watching The Mummy in a little bit. I know that.
Oh, not, I love like, that movie.
I know it's not scary, but I'm just
you should
mainly
watch both of John or both of the things. You should watch the prequel first and then the original afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm scared. I think I do worse with like paranormal scary things. So I'm not as, I don't know. I've never seen it, but I know like the book. So like, I'm like
kind of scared, but kind of not scared. Don't but anyways. Worry.
They take out the child gangbang, so you're safe.
Well, there we go. I'm feeling immediately better.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my rant. Please make fun of me for
that
being
such a baby.
That was
my rant about Stephen King.
Wow. So there you go. Okay, so I'm going to segue
child
from...
Child gangbangs, too.
There's no coming back.
A wonderful book for children, actually, was my first thing.
Oh, come
on. I'm not kidding. That was the first thing on the card. Oh, and so you set it up. You set it up as a weird thing.
Pretty sure the FBI.
No, actually.
You get children's stuff in this show,
so
I thought it was pretty
safe. Actually, I am going to segue to something better. I just wanted to
do that. Okay, yeah, let's go.
So I recently had the chance to, we have a growing tabletop gaming presence here at Comic Book. So Plaid Hat Games, who makes some phenomenal games, including one that I will always champion, which is Mice and Mystics, RIP to all the Mice movies. Abomination, the Heir to Frankenstein, is a new game that just came out from them. And it is essentially, me and Charlie originally were playing in the office. And it's a thing where it's set 20 years after Mary Shelley's death. And so you're actually going from like Mary Shelley's notes, and somebody else picks up the project. And there's like some secretive people kind of behind the scenes, and they're like, you need to make this creature. So you play competing scientists, and you're trying to assemble enough body parts to then create and bring to life your Frankenstein's monster. So you're literally going to like, part of the game
That's
is
cool.
finding materials.
I played this game. Not the board version, the light version. It doesn't work out well.
So it's actually really interesting because like parts of the game you can go to like someone can go to the morgue and get bodies that way. You can go to the graveyard, but those parts are going to degrade faster than others.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the downfall of that always.
You can straight up kill people in one section, but then you'll gain a police present. Yeah. You can also use animals, which is kind of screwed up. I never did because I have like a morality line even in game.
So you're not going to kill the animals, but did you kill people?
I did not. I tended to, you can do like research and like volunteer at the hospital, and over time you gain enough reputation to buy bodies, but you have to then like, you know, you have to do a lot of shady stuff to get there. And you can actually end up like losing humanity for a lot of things. It's really interesting. It's got a little bit of a steep learning curve, but it's a blast. So look for the review on that on comicbook.com shortly, probably in the next few days.
Sounds like a game made for my sensibilities.
It's really interesting. That's a rave for me because that was really fun. And also, just a quick shout out, our Tanner, who is one of our gaming experts here, recently had the chance to try out Borderlands 3, tried out, there's actually like 35 minutes of gameplay on the site, and he also got a ton of different interviews and stuff. But one of the coolest things is that Ice-T is in the game.
Yeah.
doing the voice for an AI teddy bear. He's essentially like a teddy bear. And it's awesome. So if you can picture Ice-T's voice coming out of a little teddy bear rolling around with you, and it's all that same humor, and he was an AI that essentially like ended up getting a split with the AI he was going out with and ends up in his teddy bear, right? It's this whole screwed up thing, but it's awesome. So you can get a bunch of information on that on comicbook.com as well. Yeah. So I'll end it on a light note. So real quick, the kids thing I wanted to actually shout out at the beginning of this was Dear Justice League, which is it's a middle grade, DC's middle grade books. And it's just freaking adorable. So like the art is awesome. It's written by Michael Northrup and drawn by Gustavo Duarte. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And it's essentially,
you did too.
It's kids for real. It's kids writing notes and letters and even like sending emails to Justice Leaguers. Aww. And they Aww. Like
Superman, what happened to your face?
Well, like Aww. It's like a whole funny thing, right? So like the kid asks, you know, do you ever like screw up sometimes? And there's this whole adventure that plays out because Superman was paying attention to his texts and ends up causing like five or six like huge atrocities and like has to clean up those messes. And then like, it's those kinds of things. It's really fun, really lighthearted. So it's out now and you can check out our review and an interview with the creator soon. So,
Dear Batman, are those men you ran over with your car ever coming back?
Batman's awesome, by the way, because he does not, he's the only Justice Leaguer that does not have email. He does old fashioned letter.
Oh my gosh.
Because you can hack all the other stuff, but you can't hack a letter.
Does he just sign it with a bat?
He does have a bat. He does have a bat.
Like a bat stamp.
A bat quill.
Oh my gosh.
It's really cute. So anyway.
That's adorable.
That's our lighthearted book.
That's good. That sounds like a good one for the kids. So let's end on a wholesome note for the kids. All right. That'll do it for this episode of, hey man, you talk to Stephen King. Don't send me your tweets or your letters. Stephen King's on Twitter. You send him those letters.
That's
and
true
those
though.
Tweets. Yeah.
You didn't write that.
He'll no, I did. I just had to read it. Anyway. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you want to join the journey and you're just popping in a couple times, but you want to get on the full ride of this train, we put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed, or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists, or you can tell any Amazon Alexa device, play Comic Book Nation. It'll fire up right for you. If you want to continue the discussion of anything we were discussing today, you can always hit us up on social media at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can reach me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can reach me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And you can reach me at Megan Peter CB.
And if you like the show, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We read reviews periodically on the show. If we read yours, we will send you some Comic Book Nation swag in the form of a t-shirt, pretty awesome t-shirt. Today, producer Jim Viscardi isn't in here today, so I'm not going to read any because I always like him to be present before I saddle him with a bunch of work of t-shirts. I'm sure he's still working out the last batch. Yeah, that's the note. If you guys heard your review read, you contacted us, give us at least 2 weeks to get your shirt out to you because we send them out in big batches because there's a lot of you. We're getting a lot of good reviews.
And Kofi read like...
Yeah.
You read like 20 over the last
2 weeks. His eyes start to tear up. All right, now, I'm going to get out of here and go cough a whole lot because I am still sick with this weird plague. Thank you, kids. That'll do it for us. This has been Comic Book Nation. We're out of here.
Deuces. Peace.
See ya.